Hello and welcome to the Autism Mums podcast.
I'm Victoria.
And I'm Natalie.
We're two sisters raising autistic children who know the joy, the challenges and the everyday moments.
This is a supportive space for honest conversations, practical tips, shared strength and expert advice.
Whether you're celebrating a win, surviving a meltdown or just trying to make it through the day, we're right here with you.
Join us as we share the ups, the downs, and everything in between parenting autistic children. We're excited for you to listen to this episode, where we're joined by Gria Jones. Gria is a speaker, writer, and podcast host, passionate about building understanding and connection in the neurodiverse world. As a mum raising an autistic and ADHD child, and part of a neurodivergent couple herself, she brings honesty, empathy, and lived experience to her work. She is the creator of the Unfinished Idea podcast and online community, where she provides encouragement, practical tools, and a reminder that no one has to walk this journey alone. In our conversation with Gria, she shares her family's journey through the challenges of diagnosis, resilience, and the importance of community support. She discusses some really great practical strategies for advocacy and navigating the educational system, which we think you're going to love. So grab your headphones and let's get started.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
It's great to have the chance to talk to you after meeting you at the Send Rally.
Yeah, it was fun. I found that rally just be really impactful because I got to meet so many people in person that I know online and have seen online. So yeah, it was good.
Can you start by telling us what your family's journey through diagnosis has taught you about resilience and hope?
Yeah, that's a great question. So just a little bit about me. I have a son who's autistic ADHD. I'm married to someone who is autistic, and then I have ADHD. And then I have another son who we don't know where he's at. He's only three. So it's
early days.
Early days. Yeah, I definitely think there's maybe some sensory processing, but I don't know if that's added into anything. So really, our journey started when our oldest son, who is autistic ADHD, was two. And we were just coming out of the pandemic, and we were just realizing that he was processing and receiving the world differently, and along with his speech being delayed. And so we were trying to really pursue that, and in the process kind of asking questions like, oh, is this typical or is this not? Because he'd hit all of his kind of milestone markers. He could say mama and dada, but he couldn't say anything really beyond that. But he could count. He could say numbers, right? Which is like, I look back and I'm like, yes, this makes all sense. But like at the time I was like, how can you count to 20 when you're two, but not say fridge or not say milk or like those kind of what we call basic words. Whereas now I'm like, oh, this all makes sense. My first conversation actually with the GP was particularly more around his speech, but he basically said that my child's speech delay and while he was processing the world differently was because I'm American. To which I said very quickly, nice try. Tell me something else. I thought maybe if it's a different, completely different language, but I'm like American, well, that's silly. But anyway, so that was, I think, maybe even our first little taste of what we were entering into of kind of even advocacy of people are going to try and tell you. Some people just aren't going to know. I think, to be honest, I think that GP didn't really know what he was talking about. And two, they're going to just try and give you the lowest effort answer sometimes because
that's
just where we are. And so we started pursuing other things. And that time he then started going to nursery, which again, nursery gave us the lowest possible effort answer to the point where at one point they said to me, I was going to have to pay for his extra support, which I knew nothing. Like being American, I know nothing about the British system, like nursery and all of that was new. School, all of that. It was a very interesting and hard experience. So then we enter into school and I wanted to be really proactive. Having had not a great nursery experience, I wanted to be really proactive with the school and say, here's strategies we like are working at home. We don't know where he is on the spectrum, but we definitely at this point know he's on the spectrum. Can we work together? I very much am pro partnership of wherever your school setting is. So just going through that and leaving that meeting. So that was before he started. So this was like the July before he started in September, and leaving that meeting feeling like they just thought I was an overprotective parent and thought I was crazy. That was one, I think, my first real moment. Like, looking back, I'm like, oh, these other moments were probably part of our story, but of when I was like, I am my child's voice. They did not hear me. This is not okay. So from that meeting, they said, give it a week. When he starts school, we'll set in some support, see how he does, blah, blah, blah. Day two of starting school, I got the call that said that they were not able to support my child's needs, that he needed to come in for an hour a day, which turned into 2 hours because I was like, I'm not coming for an hour. What am I supposed to do? And how it was set up was not legal. And realizing again, the conversations that needed to be had and who with weren't. And so again, trying to align, like, and for example, in the US, you speak to the class teacher. That's your point of call. If there's any other people you need to speak to, she'll make the reference. Whereas at our school, the class teacher didn't want to talk to us. They were re referencing us to someone else quite quickly. And I was like, who is this person? It was just a very weird experience. So partly, I think, because of learning the school system, but also just learning that after getting that phone call of, you need to come get your child, he can only do this, blah, blah, blah. And that first 6 weeks, I learned a lot and realized a lot that people don't know the law. That was the biggest thing. And that people are, because they don't know the law, they are going to also not look at the child, but look at the whole, which again, it's not wrong. I'm not saying that's necessarily a bad thing, but that means the child then gets lost, I think, that at least in our instance. And so it's from that I just started sharing. I sh started sharing our experience and going, this is what it's like to get him to school. This is the fact that he's only going for 2 hours and I have had to take work off. I've had work was quite good. They, in the end, were quite flexible with my time. But there's some people I know who wouldn't, you know, who wouldn't be able to. And just like different things that we had to work around. And it was when I started sharing that people were like, oh yeah, we've gone through that. Or we know what it's like to battle getting their shoes on and it be more than just a kind of, they don't want to, but a true battle of getting shoes on or clothes on. My child loves to be naked. So it was through that I found a community and I was able to see that kind of hope, I guess, that going back to your original question of just that there are people out here who get it. And there's hope that I am not one alone in this. And two, there are people who are ahead of me who can share their experiences. And there's people walking with me who can cheer me on and say, I'm going through this with you. And then people behind me who I can share my experience with and help in their journey as well. And just that kind of, yeah, just knowing I'm not alone has brought so much hope and so much clarity because of having those sources of people who can offer support or help who've gone. Who are a few years ahead in their journey.
It's so important, isn't it? That's my experience too, of those people that are ahead of you who can help support you, because it's such a lonely place when that starts to happen and your child is struggling so much. I remember going in late because of all those problems that you talked about. And then I had one day and I realized, actually, I'm not the only one. There's a couple of other parents in the playground who are having struggles, and just having other people who understand when, yeah, it means a lot.
The end dish of reception beginning of year one, I went to our Senko and said, statistically, there are other moms like me. Because at this point, I hadn't met anyone at school who was raising a child with additional needs. I'd met a few who went to other schools around or online, but not at our school. And so I went to our Senko and was like, okay, statistically, there are other kids like my son, which means there's parents like me. I want to meet them. How can I do that? And her first response was very sweet, very GDPR, was like, I can't just give you names. And I was like, no, like, I don't do that. That's weird. That'd be weird as well. Me just emailing someone being like, let's be friends. And so we set up a coffee morning for parents. It was open to any parents of children, like SEN children, but only moms came, which I'm glad about because that's who I was wanting to really meet. Because we know moms are the ones who do a lot more of the advocating and have the different schedules. Not saying all, but for the most part. From there, I set up a WhatsApp group and was like, let's chat and be on WhatsApp together. And we just encourage each other every so often. Start of school, we were like, okay, what are we doing to prepare our kids for school? And what are we doing that? And just knowing there's a group of people who I can text and be like, we made it to school on time. Or my kid has both shoes on today instead of one, because there are times where he has walked into school with one shoe on. The other one in his hand, but he has walked in because he didn't want to wear it.
Yeah, mine's in wellies and no socks today.
And it's what's interesting as well, this is a side note, sorry, but is the last, particularly year one, so he's now in year two, I did a lot of educating the school, which I was really shocked by. Not necessarily the Senko seemed to know, but for example, this is a very vulnerable moment, but the school called child services on us because my child came in with no socks on every day, and they were concerned why he wasn't coming in with socks, which one I was like, could you not have asked me and I would have told you. I feel like you've jumped the gun on that, but anyways, and child services came and were like, this is, yeah, you're fine, totally, it was like totally fine, totally resolved. But it was really interesting to be like, okay, because they had a conversation with our son and he was like saying how he made up this massive story basically about how we don't believe in socks and we go to a cult. Like it was just like this big, big thing. And of course I want them to believe the child. So part of me was like, okay, I'm glad you believed him. But at the same time, talk to him for 5 minutes and you'll see like he makes up these crazy stories. That's how his brain works. And it's just a really interesting thing. Last year, I just very much felt like I was having conversations with the head of, okay, so children who have ADHD, like, these are common signs. This is the fact that he's told you, like, for one of the other concerns they had was because he said apparently he hadn't eaten for 18 days, which I
Oh,
was like,
wow.
okay, first off, you would know. He would tell it, like, one, he comes to school and eats and he's fine. And two, there'd be other signs. I was just like, okay, there's just other signs. I was like, okay, this is weird. Why would you truly not believe that? It's
Of
just things like that.
course.
And he just loves to make up big stories because that's in his mind very true.
It
Tangent.
does
But
make sense. It does.
and I think this year, having had a whole year of trying to educate the school of what it's like, I'm hoping this year will be different and we can set into more of a routine and like ease,
Is he
if that makes
in
sense.
mainstream school?
Yeah, I always
Yeah.
put massive asterisks though. So his whole year group is only 30 kids.
Oh.
He's in a school where they have two classes for every year group. So yes, he is in a mainstream school, but he's in a class that has 17 max kids. They do a bit of crossover between the two classes. They do teach a little bit together. So maybe at times there'll be 30 kids, but that'll only be for core teaching and then they'll go into their kind of groups. So yes, he is in mainstream, but I big asterisks of it's not really a mainstream school.
Yeah.
He finds noise to be very overwhelming. If he were to sit in a classroom of 30 kids all day, he wouldn't cope as much as he can cope now. And the other big thing for us is we always say we just take it term by term and see. So if he's not having a great term, then we'll say, okay, we don't do a whole year because a whole year is a long time for a child.
Yeah, that's it. You can keep it under review, can't you?
And it's just also for us, we've just set that rhythm. I set every meeting out whenever I have a meeting with the school saying, I want to be in partnership with you. And so partnership means you have touch points. And so we have touch points a lot more than just once a term. We will meet at least once a term so we can hear back and meet with the teacher as well. Because that was something, again, I just found really strange that the teacher who he's having everyday contact with would send emails or give reports to the Senko, but wasn't always there to be part of the conversation, which I recognize they have a lot of demands. I'm not saying they're not busy people, but I just found it really hard. I've set it up so that at least once a term, the teacher, the Senko, and I always meet together and have a conversation of what's actually working, what's not, what's he been through this last term, basically, and again, what's coming up. I think that's something that always helps as well because we find if we can talk about things ahead of time, he's less anxious and then therefore not, he's not going to act out because he can know what to expect, which most kids like.
Does he struggle at any particular times of year? I remember my son when he was in mainstream, Christmas was really hard, you know, when they put all the decorations up and they've got the play and things like that going on.
Yeah, so he actually struggles from Easter to the end of the year. Which I find it really interesting. I'm like, you're outside more. He loves being outside and naked. Those are his two favorite things in the world. We've joked that he's going to start a nudist colony, natural nudist colony, because he just, those are his two things. He finds the end of the year hard, but I think it's partly because it's that one anticipation of what next year is going to be like, but also saying goodbye because he he does struggle with those. He struggles with those two things. He really struggles with saying goodbye to anything and everything. He doesn't know what's going to happen next. Makes it that anxiousness. Even at nursery reception year one, we've seen his behavior change, and just even to an extent, he changes. I don't know if that makes sense. You can tell he's holding in this anxiety. You can tell he's holding in this like nervousness. And so we find the needing to move a lot more is needed end of April, like after Easter to the end of the year time, which we also, last year, we decided to just not have any extra activities during that time. Weekends, we had cricket. That was it, which we found was good because it's outside and he could move. We just tried to do very low demands, go with the flow to help.
Yeah, I think that's what we do too on those tricky times. You just got to take everything else away, haven't you?
Yeah, which is hard. I don't know if you guys have felt this, but hard when you see all the other families doing all these other things or keeping their schedule the same. I felt that this year, or I guess in July of this year, like I felt grief of that, like we couldn't maintain that, and then sometimes shame that we couldn't maintain that. So
Kind of
yeah.
disheartening, isn't it? Sometimes we have very different experiences of the summer holidays, and this was something a bit that we talked about with summer holidays not looking like everybody else's, what your child can cope with. We automatically don't go to all the events that are taking place where there'll be big crowds of people. And I was saying to Natalie, I think I automatically don't look at them now, but sometimes, yes, so I think sometimes when you think about it and what other families are doing and looking, you can feel that sadness. But yeah, it's just different, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a good point of not even looking at them. That's a good habit. I don't know if
Yeah.
habit's the right word. That seems like a strange word, but yeah,
Yeah.
like a good habit to get in, because then you're not even knowing
That's
what you're
it.
missing out or what you think you're missing out on. That's a good reminder.
Yeah, we tend to do things. So for my son, for when he was really struggling a couple of years ago and he was still in mainstream, I got to the point where I thought he just can't go outside. And a friend who was like the mentors that you talk about ahead of you on the journey, she said it's probably not that he can't go outside, it's where. So I was thinking he can't cope with going into town, he can't cope with going to events. And she said, try the beach, try the woods, those things. And he's always okay. The beach, the woods. For him, he really likes water. So when you were talking about taking the demands off and things, that's what we do too. And I think, okay, if he's in his room too long, that becomes a habit too. And then it's hard to leave the room. So I try to just put in those things like, can we go to a small swimming pool near us? Like the main one is usually too big, but all the beach and swim. And it's all those adjustments that we make, isn't it?
Yeah. And some of it's just, I don't even know that I'm making them
Yeah.
until someone else points them out. So we've just spent the whole summer with my parents, which has been great. They live near the beach, and my son loves water as well. So it was great. And it was so interesting, like things that are my everyday, thinking about my mom be like, oh, yeah, that's really smart to remember. And I'm just like, oh, that's just how we leave that. Like the fact that 45 minutes before we leave the house is when I start to transition into leaving the house, if that makes sense. And or
Yeah.
like I'll start piling stuff at the door. Or even this morning, I was like, okay, 45 minutes before we left for school, I was like, bags at the door. It's like a cue for them to even know, oh, we're getting ready. Like we need to start doing things. That's just what we do.
Because that's your
And
normal, isn't
yeah,
it?
that's our normal. Exactly. Yeah. And just that idea that I didn't realize they weren't normal to
Yeah.
everyone else. I was like, oh, okay. You forget, like, this is our life.
Think it becomes an automatic filter, doesn't it? And you just do all these things and you don't always consider that other people aren't doing these things for a
Yeah.
while.
Chucking the ear defenders in the car and all of that.
Yeah. Oh, man. I think we have 10 pairs because we have one upstairs, we have one downstairs, we have one, yeah, for his backpack, one for this bag, one for.
It's a great
It's just
idea.
easier to have them all in different, instead of having to remember them all, partly because, so I have an ADHD brain, so remembering
Right.
loads of things to get out of the house is bad. But if I know, oh, I just need this one bag, I can remember the bag. So I know everything's in the bag. We have a fun bag and ear defenders. It always says ear defenders, wipes, fidgets, coloring, just whatever I know we're going to need. It's just always in there. And if I need to top it up, I do it when I get back and I don't wait, which sometimes drives my husband crazy. But I'm like,
It's a
if I
good
wait, I'll
tip.
forget and then we'll go out and not have wipes or not have crayons.
All those things, when you don't have them, it can mean the difference between that outing being a success and a complete disaster, can't it? So I think it's so good that you prioritize topping it up. We have a red bag. It's always, have you got your red bag? And I know it's got most things in for any struggle that may come up. There's hopefully something in that bag, like something to sniff. It smells very overpowering, like we're saying, headphones and all the different things that could be required. But no, if I don't have that red bag, it's not necessarily going to be okay.
Yeah, we have bags for a slightly different thing. So obviously, as his backpack, which has all of his school stuff, and then we have a car bag or longer trips that have like more car things, and then we have our going out bag. So our fun bag is that where if we're going to a restaurant or we're going to a friend's house, even the amount of times I feel like I'm moving into my friends'
Oh,
houses,
I know.
the less I need to prepare. And like you say, having that thing can either make or break. But it's not just make or break for your family, especially if you're meeting other people, but it could be make or break for them as well. And I don't want to be the reason for that. So if I can bring as much as I can. So yeah, there are
Yeah,
times
that
where
completely makes sense.
the amount of stuff I've brought, I'm like, oh my goodness. I promise we're only here for 2 hours.
Yeah, there's no more traveling light, is there?
Yeah, no. I also find it's better the amount of time I've actually never been to some people's houses because it's better for them to come here and come to our house and have a play date, or we do a lot of movie nights because that seems to be a better way for them to not be overwhelmed but still have friends over. We do movie night in the afternoon after school. We often say, oh, it's easier if you want to come to us. We don't mind hosting. I don't mind having people over.
Be
It's
easier,
very,
can't it?
yeah. It's also great. We don't live that far from the school, literally like a
Good.
5 minute walk. So that also helps. So when, we're at school, because my child loves to invite people over.
Right.
One day we had six kids come over and I was like, that's fine. I was glad I hoovered.
I think something that you touched on earlier already was about misconceptions of raising a neurodivergent child. What do you think are the biggest misconceptions apart from what you've already mentioned?
I think there's two that have come up a lot recently is one, their abilities. So something that a friend said to me once was autism is one word, but means many worlds. And the idea that just because someone's autistic doesn't mean the same thing for someone else. That great saying, one autistic person, just because in your mind, I think a lot of people still think autism is that level three nonverbal potential developmental delays and things like that. That actually, when I say autism, it can mean my husband, who's a nurse, who lives a very fully life functioning, like, yes, there are things about him that he needs a little more support with or we adapt to, but it's not the same. I think there's that kind of educating. There's different types, there's different levels. I always say it's a spectrum within a spectrum within a spectrum because it's just so many things. And then also just that they're people, we're people. However your brain type is, if that's ADHD, autism, OCD, or even neurotypical, like we're all people and we all have emotions, but how we show them might be different. We all want to show our emotions, but we also want to receive emotions. It just might be different in how we do that. Being aware that I think I remember someone saying to me, oh, your son can't be autistic. He feels so deeply. And I'm like, no, autism doesn't mean you have no feelings. Like
No.
for my husband, he has feelings, like obviously, and he knows he has feelings, but how he shows them is very different of than how I would show them or how other people show them. So it's not that he doesn't have them, it's just they're shown differently. And so, yeah, just remembering that we're all human. We all have feelings.
I think that's a really
Definitely.
good point. I know a few years ago, Nan died, and she was quite involved really with the children. And at the time, I told my son, and he was like, okay, so Nanny's died. Okay. And then it was a year later, we were driving somewhere, and he suddenly started crying in the car, and he went, I miss Nanny. And it for him, the grief was so delayed, which, but it's understanding at the time, isn't it? It's not that it didn't affect him in any way. It was just going to take a long time to process.
Yeah, so my husband's grandmother, my kid's great grandmother died a couple of years ago now. And they still ask every day, like both my kids ask when we go, when we put them to bed. And Granny Frida, she's died and she's in
No.
heaven. It's like they have to be reminded every, because that was their kind of first death, like first process. And it's just really interesting to see how they've processed that and how they work it out in their little brains. And yeah, it's fun to see that sometimes. It sounds weird to say that about talking about someone who died, but to see how they work things out. But then also sometimes I am sad because I know it's harder for them to work things out and to do that. I think you can hold both joy and grief at the same time. I've talked about this a lot with other people. I love my child, but I'm also sad for my child. I have great joy in my child, but I also have great grief in my child and just the things that he's gonna experience and not experience. Holding those together and knowing it's okay.
And
There's
I
nothing
think it
wrong.
can come in waves of their development too. I don't know if you found this, but I know one of our early ones was when my son was in year four and the rest of the class was going off on the residential trip. And it seemed really daft, but it felt like a really hard day just grieving this different path. I was quite early on in the journey too. And a friend said to me, well, the grieving, it comes in waves. And yeah, just accepting it's going to look different.
And I think that's as well something that I've learned a lot about this last year is that the grief comes in the school trip or not being able to go to school. I remember being in the grocery store and he was really struggling with making a choice on something. And I won't lie, I wasn't a great parent. I lost a little bit of my patience because I was like, we need, like, why can't you pick this? Like, it was, I think he was picking cereal or something. And I realized as I was saying that, I realized like he genuinely did not know how to choose. Like he was genuinely having paralysis like of choosing because there was so much choice and he wanted to make the right choice. And it was just all these different things that were happening. And I remember just tearing up. I didn't quite full on cry, but tearing up of, oh, like even that choosing cereal can be hard for him sometimes. And the next time he chose cereal, just fine. It wasn't like every time, but it's just that those, even those little things of, making choices are really hard for you, and that's okay. Taking time to stop and realize that.
Yeah, I think in my experiences, that's been underestimated, like how hard that can be. 'Cause my son will often say, I can't choose, I just can't choose. And it's something that we constantly work on, but just between clothes, or I know he's been in the situation at school where he wasn't keen to do a session, and he's at specialist school now, so there's more flexibility. It's very good. But trying to be helpful, he was said, you can do this with this person, or you could do this with this person. And he just paralyzed in the same way, I think, as your son with the cereal. I can't make the wrong decision. I might upset the person I don't choose. It could be wrong. And he ended up just paralyzed, sitting, not doing anything for the session because he couldn't choose. And that's sad. That's hard.
And it's hard because you want, I don't know, I want them to enjoy what they're doing. And like you said, for thinking about, yeah, I don't want to upset this person or I don't want to do that. Just all of that. I don't know. I just find sometimes hard. I'm like, oh, I don't want you to have to think about that. I want you to just enjoy and have fun.
Yeah, just what do you want to do? It can be what you want to do. It's not, nothing terrible is going to happen if it wasn't quite right. Or, yeah, it's certainly for us a work in progress.
Oh, yeah, same here. Yeah, I'll often choose breakfast for my son because I know he can't do that. But then I'm sitting there thinking, am I choosing the right thing today or not? Is it going to get rejected? Or you don't know if you're helping really or not.
Have you guys found if you do it? So thinking about breakfast, we always do it the day before. So when they're going to bed, our bedtime routine is very strange. It's like brushing our teeth and then we talk about breakfast, but we like choose our breakfast. So they always, it's pretty much the same two choices, but it's toast or cereal. But we do it the night before because then I don't, and I don't know why. Another friend told us, they said, oh, we just do things the night before and it seems like the pressure is off because
I was just going to say, if you've not got the other
like
anxieties of getting out the door for school and things, yeah, that's a
that's a
good
good tip.
idea.
So we talk about breakfast. So as we're brushing our teeth, we talk about breakfast, which I always think is really funny.
Fair
And then as
enough.
well, like clothes, he wears a uniform, so it's not during the week, not as bad, but usually at the weekend, either I pick it because he can't, or we, if I know we're going somewhere, like for example, we were going out and I was like, I didn't know what trousers he likes to wear because he has sensitivity to like clothes on his skin. So the night before, I said, oh, what trousers do you want to wear tomorrow? This is what we're doing. This is where we're going. Giving kind of explain what we were doing. And I found that he picked it quite easily. Yeah. I just wonder if having the pressure of now that it just helps them
They're
and it helped
really good
us.
ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm
really
going to
good.
try those.
Yeah.
Those, thank you.
Report back.
Yeah,
See what.
we'll let you know. We'll give it a go.
So for any parents that are listening or watching now who need to advocate for their child, is there any tips you can give how they can do that effectively?
Yeah, there's a few. I have a few that I've tried and tested, which I would love for more people to try and test and get back to me if they found they helped. So one thing is keeping the child at the center of the conversation. And so I was finding it to be very tick boxy situations. And so I've started every meeting. So whoever's in the room, that could be the Senko and I, that could be the child's or educational psychologist, it could be he has like some play therapy, it could, anyone in the room has to go around and tell me one good thing about my child or one improvement about my child. Partly because I was also finding in the meetings, it's all negative or things that targets he's not meeting or things that aren't happening. And so I wanted to remember that there is good in my child. He is doing some really good things and has made some really big strides. Starting that meeting with that, which at first was hard. I'm just going to be honest. Some people found it hard to say positive things about my child. And not because I don't think they didn't want to, but because that's not what they're looking for. Like they were looking for the bad or the difficult or the not hitting the marks. And I remember one meeting, they were all like, the first time I said it, I was, they were all a bit like deer in
Oh God.
headlights. And I was like, they all have to be different. 'Cause I could also tell, it's like, oh, there's like several different people in the room. And I was like, one person's going to say it and then they're all going to agree and say that's their thing. So I was like, all has to be different. Whereas now
Love
it's a
that.
norm, it's become what they do. And I have told other parents I meet with to do the same, and they've said there's a shift. There's a shift of that, a whole child experience and not just the failings
That. I like
aspect.
that
That's
because
really
it's
good.
actually hard just to sit there and focus on the negative as well about your child when there is good. It's not a balanced picture.
Yeah. The other thing I would say is always go in with an attitude of partnership. And even stating again, I stated at the start of the meeting, so I have a whole little spiel that I'm sure our Senko is so tired of hearing, but I do it every time, even if it's just her and me, which we meet a lot. We meet a lot, but I do it. And it's just that, you know, I say, I want to work in partnership with the school. I want to work in partnership with you. I want to work with partnership with the teacher. But you also need to remember that that my son is my whole world. And so every day when my child enters the school gate, I am giving you my whole world. And so that means I'm going to be a mama bear. I'm going to protect my world. And if I come across at times frustrated or angry, please just know that's where I'm coming from. Again, just, you can tell I've said it quite a few times, but that doesn't mean I don't want to work in partnership. Reiterate that. And it's been, I can definitely see when I say that, and even in meetings, I'll say, okay, and I'll even say in meetings, I'm getting a little frustrated with this because of whatever. I want to remind you that, yes, in my frustration, I still want to work in partnership with you. And I definitely have seen that. I've definitely seen that. And I've definitely seen, because I've said that, or because of the attitude I want to bring, I've seen the results I want, if that makes sense. And I'm not saying it's a like dangle in front of them and say these magical words and it will all be fine, but it's that I think it's just reminding both myself when I say those words and then that I want to do this in partnership, but at the same time, this is not okay. Like, this is a broken system. And I'm very aware, especially with the Senko, that she's having to play the broken system. She's not necessarily the policymakers of that broken system. So I'm very aware of that. But at the same time, she is, I always say, she's a representative of the system in the meeting. She gets to hold that account. But yeah, I think those are the biggest things I would say is make sure the meetings about your child. So start, ask everyone to go say a positive thing about your child. And it's even, I'll just also add to that, like the school's now adopted that a little bit more. And so
Brilliant.
even on different reports, I've noticed they've even mentioned, oh, we're now starting to do this, which Part of me wants to be like, I told you to do this. This is not your idea. But also, part of me is very happy that they're doing it. So, yeah, so start with a positive and just continually remind throughout the conversation that you want to work in partnership with the school.
That's a
And yeah.
great idea. I like that.
So, yeah, those are, yeah, I have many more, but
Really
we
good
could be here
tips.
for a
No,
long time.
they're really
So,
good tips.
yeah,
Yeah.
really good tips.
I think
Excellent.
it can be so emotional, can't it? Dealing with everything you have to deal with, and it's easy to go in that attack mode and it doesn't get you what you want. So I think, yeah, working in partnership and focusing on positives is a really good thing.
Yeah, and I'm not, I like, I will be the first to admit, I'm not always perfect at it. So this is not me saying I'm great at it, but I have found just repeating when I go into meetings, like having that spiel. So the first time I had it written on my phone, and then it's gotten, I now have it memorized, but it's just helped me to go into the mindset, like you said, of not necessarily like attack mode or fight mode, but of we're on equal ground. We do ultimately want the same thing. Like, we just need to figure out the common ground.
Absolutely. Now, you have your own podcast, The Unfinished Idea. When did you come up with the idea for that? How did it come about?
Yes. Most ADHD thing I've ever done. So I started sharing about our experiences online, and a few people in our kind of more close circle reached out to me and said, we're just wanting to have some kind of more one-to-one conversations to understand. And it was after one of those with a really good friend who said, oh, you should start a podcast. You should. This is really good. It's so helpful and informational. And I was like, yeah, okay, great, done. So that was like 10 o'clock in the morning. By that night, I had a website and socials
Wow.
and was like looking at what gear I needed. So my husband came home and I was like, we are now podcasting. And he was like, what are we podcasting about? That's kind of our life. But yeah, and it really is just wanting to have conversations about the everyday and what it's like to be living in the neurodiverse world and kind of the realities of either being neurodivergent, raising a neurodivergent child, or being married to one. I've added that in since I was like, I'm married to one. So had that
Like
in.
that.
And yeah, it's really informal. I like the idea came like from having that conversation with a friend over a cup of coffee, and I just wanted that to continue. And so it's just really informal. We have parents on, we have authors on, we have professionals on, wanting it to be a place where people will feel seen and heard. But then also, something that I kind of also surveyed my audience was that there's a lot of people in it who are also supporting those kind of families or people. So, thinking about like the grandparents, the aunts, the best friends, the uncles, those kind of people as well. So, it's also a place where you can learn and grow and understand a little bit more about what the everyday is.
Oh, that's lovely. So useful, I think, as well. So,
Yeah.
where's the best place for listeners to go to connect with you after this?
Yeah, so you can listen to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. We are everywhere. It's just the Unfinished Idea. And then that's also all of my socials, my website, everything is the Unfinished Idea. And my little logo icon, I guess, is a little brain. So I always just say follow the brain. So it's on everything. So yeah, you can reach out to me. I love it when people like DM me and like, hey, I listened to this episode from this show. So feel free to do that if as well. Brilliant.
Brilliant, thank you. And thanks so much for coming on and joining us today. You've shared so many great tips. We're going to try ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. It's been fun. It's been great to have a great conversation.
Thanks for joining us today on the Autism Mums podcast.
We hope you have found a little support, a little solidarity, and a reminder that you are not in this alone.
If you enjoyed the episode, we'd love it if you'd follow the show and share it with another parent or carer who might need to hear it.
And if you've got a story or a moment you'd like to share, we'd love to hear from you at www.theautismmums.com.
Until next time, take care.